My name is Ralph White. I'm an alcoholic. Let me pray so you can see if we're going to get anything done this morning. So we don't have a lot of time, so I'm going to get right to whatever we're going to get to. Because I see so many people with, Leslie said people came armed with, I don't like to say weapons because I see fighting anything and anybody, but I see people brought to the task. Well, it's required. People have notebooks and people have books. And I feel some kind of way about that because it feels as if I should have been more prepared in this situation. But when John talked about, Ralph, what do you want to talk about? I said, John, come up with something. And he said, let go and letting go and letting God. And how many people do we have in here? Do we have any people in here that's in their first year of recovery? Oh, my God. Oh, okay. I'm asking all those who didn't raise your hand, I'm going to ask your indulgence there. Because let's spend some time talking to the folks that did raise their hand. This business of let go and let God. And what does that have to do with why I came into this program? What does that have to do with the 12 steps? And like my sponsor likes to say, what does that have to do with Wednesday? And this letting go and letting God idea, why? Why? Why let go? What am I letting go of and why am I letting go of it? You know, and why at any rate would I let go and let this power that you guys talk about that may be foreign to me, why am I going to do that? So the first part of this let go and let God is, you know, why? You know, why would I do it? And why would I let go of anything? In the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our basic text of recovery, there are three things that take place at each one of our steps. You know, so for most of the people here, we all know we're in a 12-step program. And that's the program of recovery. We have three sides to our program, three legacies, unity, recovery, and service. First legacy, unity, that's the fellowship, going to meets. Second legacy, recovery. That's the 12-step program. And the fellowship and the program, new friends, are two different things. They're part of the same entity, but they are not one and the same. I can be a member of the fellowship and not be practicing the 12-step program at all. You know, and so when we talk about the program of recovery, that's why, how many of the people in here, where my relapsers at? So I'm always interested, a lot of people say, AA don't work for me, you know, AA don't work. Well, I've never practiced the program of recovery. I might have come to meetings, you know, that's like going to a gym, you know, going to meetings and nothing. That's going to the gym, you know, and I might go to the gym, I might have a gym membership. I might know everybody that comes in there, you know, I'm handing towels to cats. Man, it's good to see you, you know, and I'm handing out towels and I'm watching them on the treadmill and I'm watching them on the weights. And at the end of the hour, I go home, all I did is felt, hey, what's going on? I see you, yeah, hey girl, you going all this, you know. And then I'm wondering why in 2 months John is walking out of there and he's losing this gut and he's getting toned and he's getting buff, and I'm looking the same way. I ain't picked up a weight, but I've been in the gym, right? I've been fellowshipping, I've been doing all the deal, but I have not done the deal that you do in the gym. And that's the same thing when I come to this spiritual gymnasium that we call Alcoholics Anonymous. There are some things, yeah, you can come to the gymnasium, but that is not doing, that's not putting in, you know, the spiritual work. And so the 12-step program, that's a different deal. And so this idea of coming to the 12-step, so this let go and let God idea, in the first, the letting go, why? Why would I do it? And there are, you know, there are good reasons why I give up on myself. There are good reasons why, because that idea of letting go and letting God is critical and fundamental to what it is that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. So a lot of the relapsers that say, you know, I came and AA didn't work for me, and they, well, I didn't ever practice the program of recovery. First step in that, you know, we know what the first step says on the wall. Admitted that I'm powerless over alcohol and my life has become unmanageable. But inside the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is step A, the step that precedes step one. You know, fully conceding to my innermost self that this is the first step in recovery. And that full concession to my innermost self doesn't come from outside influence. You know, folks can be tough, man, I'm tired of you. You need to do something about your drink. You need to do something about yourself. You know, the boss is telling you, the wife is telling you, the kids are telling you, your mom is telling you, all kind of people. You know, I'm the last one that, you know, gets the message. You know, everybody's tired of me and for me before I get tired, you know. But and that concession, which is different than that admission, you know, I'm one of the ones that came around three or four times too. And the reason that's critical to know, that admission, I made the admission when I first came. 1985 was my first stint with you guys. I didn't come to stay until 1986. But my first time around, I made the admission that I'm an alcoholic. And making the admission was cool because it's the price of admission to get to this podium. You know, you got to admit you out at home. You know, you can't share unless you admit. And I like talking. So, yeah, I'm an alcoholic, you know. And I'm a fitter-inner. You know, everybody else said it. I'm going to say it. Where I come from, you get browbeat. You know, are you an alcoholic when you get on? Yeah, I'm young, you know. Because I come from a wide variety of things. I come from a real bad stint of smoking. You know, I was really unclear on that. But, you know, in my home group, my first home group at home was an old style, you know. You're alcoholic, you know, almost scaring you into it. And, so I admitted it, and then after another stint out there, alcohol had its way with me, and it did what it is that it does. So this first part, the first part of why would I turn my, you know, and so this letting go and letting God, where we find it in our steps, where it sounds the most is in our third step. Made a decision to turn my will, which is my thinking, and my life, which is my actions, over to the care of God's understanding. That feels like where it happens, but there are some things that have to precede that. So the first part of this, why let go and let God, probably take place in our first three steps. The why. Why would I do that? We don't have enough time to go through all those steps this morning, but I'm going to touch on them. You know, I come from a dark place, and I come from the doctor's opinion. If you want to find out in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, New Friends, you know, the doctor's opinion, you know, Bill's story, I like to start at the forewords. You know, there's the letter from the doctor, and you know, and he talked about. But in the forewords really contain a lot of the history. But the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution which kind of veers a little bit away from one and starts previewing us into some other steps. But the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, there is a solution, and halfway up through, more about alcoholism, I'll talk about powerlessness of the body. And that powerlessness of the body is really important for me to know. It's a signature thing. I hear a lot of people talk about, well, I was an alcoholic before I put anything in me, you know. Fundamental to the idea of being alcoholic is drinking alcohol. That's pretty fundamental too, you know. So it's a whole lot of neurotic people in the world. You'll hear a lot of people say, I was an alcoholic before I took. No, there's a physical component to what it is that I suffer from. Make no mistake about that. And it's one of the reasons you'll never hear Ralph White get to a podium and say, it ain't about drinking. I've been doing this thing over 31 years, and it's still about not drinking. It's still fundamentally about that, because everything else rests on that. That's the one thing that I will not lose. Once you've been pickled, you do not go back to cucumber. You know, I've been pickled, and I'm real clear on that. You know, that genie's out the bottle. But it's really important that I know and I grasp this physical component to the disease that I suffer from. How do I know that I suffer that physical component? I like the descriptions that the doctor gives in the doctor's opinion. He starts by saying some things that are foreign to me when I'm new. You know, so new friends, when you read the doctor's opinion, he'll start talking about this deal, and he'll call it an allergy. He says, this thing that I suffer from, and he says a couple of things about this allergic reaction to alcohol. Now, that sounds really strange to me. When I go through the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, I like to do it, A, with somebody else. I found that really comforting. Now, here's the curious thing about that. I'm going to go all over the place this morning, you know, because stuff is firing as a gun. Here's the curious thing about going through the Big Book with somebody. It's better than going by yourself. But when the Big Book was written, you know, back in 1935, a couple of cats got together. First cat had come out in 1934, got sober, Bill Wilson, D. Towns Hospital, December 1934. Ran into a doctor 6 months later in Akron, Ohio. He was on a business trip. Business didn't come off well. Ended up looking for a drunk to work with. That drunk turned out to be Dr. Bob Smith. Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson got together in 1935, Dr. Bob had a brief relapse after they first met, went on a trip, you know, early, like a lot of newcomers. Shit, I've been sober a couple of weeks. Let me go down to Vegas and hang out. I'm good. Spots, I got this. I'm going to run to Vegas, you know. Last time I was in Vegas, I showed my ass, you know, everybody laughing. I was on a business thing, everybody at work. I embarrassed myself. I want to go back to Vegas this time and do, you know, and Dr. Bob said, I want to go back to this convention. Last year when I was at the convention, man, I made a fool out of myself. I want to let them see me now. Well, he let them see him now. And then, you know, when, you know, they call Bill, you know, call his old lady and call Bill when he got him. We need you to come down here. They drug him off the, you know, they had to carry him off the train when he came home. So, bam, Dr. Bob, early experiment, you know, we learned some things from his experiment that we do. New friends, when you go someplace, if you have a legitimate reason where there is going to be some drinking, go take somebody. Take somebody. You know, we've learned some stuff since then. But Dr. Bob had it for it. But when he came back, he stayed sober. And our birthday in Alcoholics Anonymous marks the day that he got sober, June 10th, 1935. And so in 1935, those two guys started looking for people like us. And in a couple of years, you know, some people, about 40 people would stay sober. And they said, look, you know, let's put this thing in a book. And they started writing this book in 1937, and they published that book in 1939. And so when they published that book, and in that book is contained a whole lot of rich experience. The thing that differentiates the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous from most textbooks, the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, a textbook, most textbooks, particularly that have to do with medical stuff like our book does, you know, some matter scientific, some matter medical. Most of the time they lend themselves to the scientific process. You know, hypotheses, you know, experiment, you know, conclusion, theory, you know, they have theory, hypothesis. That ain't how this book is written. And it's not a theoretical text. It don't have a hypothesis. No, it's a book of experiences. It separates it from anything else. It's a book that's combined experiences. You know, so when I read the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, and it doesn't always lend itself to Webster's definite. Now, Webster's is helpful when I go through it, but not everything is about Webster's definitions. Now, that brings me back to where I started from. So when the doctor talks about this allergy that he says separates me, he calls it differentiates me from other folk. He said, Ralph, if you have this allergic reaction when you drink, it only occurs in folk like you. We call those folk alcoholics. And what separates them from other people, there's a defining characteristic that when they start drinking, he called it an allergy. We just call it can't stop. You know, when they start drinking, something happened in them that they can't stop. The reason it's important for me to know that, because allergy threw me for the longest time. And some new friends in here to be thinking the same thing, too. Allergy? When I had allergies to anything, as a kid, I had an allergy one time to strawberries. And when I had strawberries, I'd break out in these big rashes and these big bumps. Trust me, I wasn't rushing strawberries. I was not trying to, you know, eat a whole bunch of strawberries. So I was thinking to myself, how can I have an allergic reaction? I don't run from alcohol. I run to alcohol. What the hell do you mean, an allergic reaction? So it didn't lend itself totally to Webster's, although it lent itself somewhat to Webster's. Webster's Dictionary calls an allergy, and you know, an unnatural reaction to a food or a substance. So it's an unnatural reaction. And so the natural reaction to alcohol, get a warm, tipsy feeling, get enough in, you stop. Cool. I got the bug. I got what I want. You know, when I drink, I get thirstier. That's how the reaction, and the doctor says this reaction that I have, he calls it a manifestation, the way an allergy shows up. The allergy shows up to shellfish, to pollen and other stuff, and sneezing or bumps or rashes. The way an allergy shows up to an alcoholic is an outbreak of drinking. I drink, or I'm drinking while drunk. That's the way it shows up for me. When I drink, I get thirstier. Another piece to this is it don't happen in everybody else. You might think it do because you probably only ran with people like you. So it looked like we all drank like that. it looked like everybody drank like that. Everybody closed down happy hour and then go look for the after hours. You know, at least everybody that ran with me. You know, and so, but here's the tricky part. Here's the tricky part. Some of my buddies, some of the people I roll with, in fact, one of the guys that turned me out in college, got older, got married, stopped. He cut out that foolishness. He stopped that nonsense like I thought I was going to do. I'm outgrow this. It's a phase I'm going through. And that phase got to last in a long, long. I was like, damn, this is a long-ass phase. You know, and then I started just like, ooh, you know. So in the book, it calls classifications of drinkers. So it got really important for me to see from my own experience. And that's the only place I can see this is my experience. Sometimes we want to do alcohol's job for it. Sponsors, well-intentioned sponsors, well-meaning people in Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to look at you. Man, what, ain't you tired? You know, and I want to talk you in. The job of that, you know, we want you when alcohol is through with you. We want you when alcohol is through with you. We ain't here to convince anybody to stop drinking. What convinces me to stop drinking is drinking. I didn't get convinced by not drinking. What convinced me was drinking. And I have this bodily difference, and it got apparent to me after a time. It got to the point where I thought it was a choice. I thought it was a choice. It felt like it was a choice of mine that every 2 weeks I knew without fail I'm spending a whole paycheck. Intended to. I thought I did something wrong if I ended up on Sunday with like 78 cents. I didn't budget my money right. What am I going to do with this $2? You know, No. You know, and it got that way. It felt that way. And so this deal of mine got so entrenched, it ended up being not even a period of premeditation for me. You know, I drank and I used. And so at the end, the way it looked for me was money loaded. Just like that. Money low. No premeditation. No more I'm going to pay rent first. No more I'm going to go get Pampers. No more I'm going to pay money low. Period. And so it took me to that dark place. So being convinced in my life. So I came in here in that condition. You know, I'm tore up. I'm 33 years old and life is over for me. And I hit a room and I hit some people. And I'm one of the guys that I don't, you know, I had a guy that I sponsored, and he had been in 17 programs, and he called me one night, and he's like, can you come get me? And he was on the street in a t-shirt and some tennis shoes, you know, t-shirt, no socks, tennis shoes and shorts in the middle of the winter. Thank God it's L.A., we don't get too freezing cold. But he was like, you know, dude, I said, what you want to do, right? He said, I want to do whatever you tell me to do. I said, you want to try another program? You want to just go to Marine? You know, well, what is another program going to do? You know, I've tried that. You can't guarantee me what's going to happen. And I said, no, I cannot. New friends, none of us can guarantee you what's going to happen if you try this way of life. But what I told Raymond that night is, I can't guarantee you what's going to happen if you come on this side of the street. Me and you can both guarantee you what's going to happen if you don't. We can both guarantee you what's going to happen if you don't try this. And that's that part right there. A lot of times, I think most of us come in on that piece. I don't know what's waiting on me in recovery. I don't know. It don't seem like bright shining lights. It don't seem like, because when we come to this thing, which might be the best step of our life, it's not a lot of confetti. And it ain't, hey, you go. Even though us on this side, we'd be welcome home. You'd be like, welcome home. This is it. You know, be mad. I like them when they're mad. When people come in that's new, that's too jokey, I kind of get nervous. I like it when they're kind of sullen. You know, it's like, because it shouldn't be new. The party's done. It's over. Over. And if there's anybody in here that's new, we know a couple of things about you. One of the things we know is you didn't have a good year last year. So coming in here on that deal, so why would I even try something new? And again, this let go and let God process is a process. And it starts with those baby steps. And the first place it starts with is, you know, the negative seconds. So now that propels me into that. But there's another feature to that first step, the physical component. Okay, I get it. It's the first one. I never knew that. You know, people will say, why do I need to read the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous? Why can't I just read the steps? They're on the wall at all our meetings. Why do I need that big old book? Here's the Cliff Notes version. They put the steps right there. Why do I need all this other extra, you know? I don't need the background. I just need the right there, the core of it. Well, what step of ours says we don't take the first one? Somebody might say, admit it, that I'm powerless over alcohol. Okay, I saw it. I said that when I was out there. What step says we don't take the first one? The doctor's opinion says our only, you know, so our first suggestion that we can suggest is entire abstinence. I got to go up in here to find where he says for the first time. All we can suggest is entire abstinence. That's the only way to treat the physical. That's the only way to treat the physical. It's the only thing I can do 100% right. It's the only way. Don't take the first. I used to think, man, I know I was drinking Southern Comfort. I know I was drinking rum. I put that vodka on top of. That's where you messed up. You know, you drinking brown. Now you done went clear. What's wrong with you? You know, it was at number 6. You were cool till you got to number 3. You know, old timers and age say it ain't the caboose that gets you, it's the engine. It's the first one. It's the first one. And, you know, so that our first suggestion is entire absence. Don't take the first one. Well, if it's just that simple, why does my ass keep going? How many people knew not to take the first? Had come to the program and got some information. How many people knew not to take the first one and took the first one? That's the other baffling feature. That's the real problem. You know, when we get into more about alcoholism on about page 23 in the big book, it says, so if all the rest of this would be academic if we just didn't take the first one. All this other stuff we're talking about, you know, would be pointless and academic if we just didn't take the first one. Wouldn't mean nothing. So why is it that he takes the first one? You know, so the real problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in his body. Because something happens that makes Ralph go back to the first one even when he knows better. Something happens in a guy like Ralph, you know. Before I even came to you guys, I didn't spend a whole check. Spent it. Gone. Again. That's the worst part. It's again. This ain't new news. This been going on, you know. It's a trip. You know, the book has a lot of things that come to life for you once you read it. There's a part in there that says common sense becomes uncommon sense. You know, uncommon sense becomes for real. This is for real. I was so deep in the life, it didn't even seem abnormal to me that my wife shouldn't expect to see me on the Friday after payday. That's just par for the course. I'm out till Sunday. Don't even, now, I it wasn't that part for the course that I wasn't nervous when I was coming in. The biggest reason for being nervous while coming in is because you coming in broke. That's a quote. Now, if you got the whole, if you'd have left the gym, because it got to the point right now, check, I don't know why, okay, we're getting ready to go to one of these places. Check this out. So, I'm doing a whole bunch of stuff, right? I'm not just drinking. I'm doing a whole bunch of stuff. So this is too many times. This is too many times. So I don't know a way I'm going to get in the house this time. So I'm on the phone in a phone booth. This happened. When a speaker says this is a true story, it always makes me think, oh, you leaving it open for me to think everything else ain't true. You know, so I hate saying this is a true story because you'd be like, well, what about the rest of that stuff you've been saying? But this is This is real. So I'm in the phone booth, and I got a T-shirt, and I tear this T-shirt, and I get on the phone, and I try to disguise my voice, and I call my wife and say, you know, is this Ralph White's house? And you say, you know, okay. And then, if you want to see him again, you know. You can. Now, y'all might think that's funny. There was one way that plan would have worked. If they'd have offered to keep me and not send me home, she might have sent them some money. Keep him, they go, what? I'm thinking, really? Really, dude? You think that your wife is going to pay some money to get your behind back after all that you... First, just fundamentally, that she gonna believe this. That's the first place. Let's start with. But your mind go to a place. My mind, you know, goes to a place. And I was like, so anyway, I don't know where that one came from. But woo. So this idea, you know, they call it an obsession. Early on in recovery, they used to talk about a thought that overpowers all other thoughts. If you want us, you can't describe it to nobody else, but if you want us, because I'd be coming in on that cold remorse. That's where I started with. And that remorse would be so cold, I'd be crying with my wife. We went to church a couple of times. Afterwards, I promised I was going to do better. They'd be singing in church on Sunday, and I'd be feeling it, and I'm crying. And, you know, I got a little daughter, and I'm like, and it's Sunday, and I'm broke. And Monday, and Tuesday, and Wednesday, and I go to work because I can go to work good when I'm broke. Getting, you know, ain't no problem, you know. And I'm at work, but something happened about Wednesday or Thursday. Something invariably happens about Wednesday or Thursday. This idea, then, you know, the doctor talks about. Restless, irritable, and discontent, unless he can at once experience that sense. I don't get ease and comfort from getting older no more. That's a long. At the end for me, I'm doing oblivion. You know, that's the only thing that's there for me. The only time I had enjoyment was right after getting whatever it was. That's the only time I had enjoyment. After that, it was all downhill. You know, I'm drinking to stop from thinking about where drinking is taking me. I'm doing that kind of thing. You know, so that sense of ease and comfort that comes immediately from taking that first one. So this idea, and I keep going back to that, because if you're an Alcoholics Anonymous, alcohol ain't our problem. That ain't the reason we're here. Folk like us, alcohol is our solution. If you make it to these rooms, that ain't why we're here, because alcohol is our problem. Alcohol is our solution. And I go back to that time after 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 time. And I don't care what it does to me. I don't care what it does to my life. And the whole thing about the destruction that it wreaks on Ralph, I pay for it. I pay for it to happen. You know, if somebody had a baseball bat and was beating me, and that's the cold thing. It's like paying somebody to do that to you. You know, and alcohol will make you know. It'll be kicking that. It'll make you swear you're partying. You know, so that idea was so deep in me. So this obsession. So the real problem with alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. And that's why we have a 12-step program. Because a one-step program would just say no don't work for people like me and you. The people who can just say no are the people who don't have that thing. I got that thing. Don't know why, don't know how, don't know where I got it from. I had that thing. And it really don't respect who you are, where you are, where you come from, what kind of money you got, how cute you are, where you stay, none of that. If you got that thing, it's going to get you. So I got up in here with that. So I'm desperate because I'll hit a room like this and people will say, here's, you know, it ain't going to get better. It ain't going to get better. So now I'm defeated, hopeless. you know, hopeless, and I give up on me because I can't stop me. I had a 2-year-old little girl. I tried to stop for her, and I tried to stop for my wife. I stood in circles with me and my mother and my brothers holding hands, crying. My mama couldn't stop me. The love of my mother couldn't stop me. The love for my mother couldn't stop me. The love for my daughter couldn't stop me. The job couldn't stop me. Thank God I never stood in front of a judge who was trying to stop me, but I've seen enough people who can. No person could stop me. I'm stripped like that. You know, so that brings me right here to this squarely to where we're going this morning. So when we first talk about this let God go and let God be, now I got to get introduced to this God idea. I was raised in Baptist church, you know, and I grew up there for the long. My mother was a praying lady, deeply religious. Took the 6 boys to church. I'm a late bloomer, and so I was one that, I was a square guy in my neighborhood. I was made to go to church every Sunday morning since I could remember. My granddaddy was one of the founders of the first church we were members of. Then we went to another church, a big church in South Central Los Angeles, and it was a really, had a minister in there who was really well known. He was an assemblyman and the first black assemblyman in Los Angeles. And so my mom was really active, and so were the white boys. My last name is White. All of us were white. And really well known, we were the ones that would get up at church on Easter and, do the recitations and do the deal. And, and I could recite. My mom was my Sunday school teacher, and I'm good at remembering stuff. And I like attention. So we recite the stories, and everybody knew us, and we were the square guys. And I made a vow. When I turn 16 years old, you'll never have to worry about Ralph White darkening the doors of anybody else's church. Said it, did it, meant it. 60s, I'm coming up, I'm rolling with cats, and it would be cute little sayings, religion is an opiate of the people, I'd rather smoke mine, thank you very much, look at my mom, I'm from and we kind of in the South, so some people in here might understand a Southern Baptist kind of tradition, and they get to shouting in church, and I'd be looking at my mom, I'm 7 or 8 years old, looking at my mom like, don't you embarrass me up in here. When we talk about selfish and self-centered, when we talk about that, I'm going to try to stay near the mic, I understand that, it's my core. It's deep inside of me. When I started going in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and getting a real look at the guy you're looking at right now, I really understood selfish, self-centered, self-absorbed. I was in elementary school, and I'd be walking down the hall. I'd be walking down the hallway in my elementary school. I can remember it just as clear. I was about 9 or 10 years old, and I was just regular walking, and then I remember, oh, shit, put a little thing in your stride because I might be on candy camera. A lot of youngsters in here don't know about that, but there's some people in here that remember candy camera. And the guy you're looking at right now, so selfish. That's a real thought of mine that I'm going to be discovered. I might be okay. And that's real. So I've always been dominated by that kind of self-absorption. And so then, when I'm turning 16 years old, and I overdosed on church. We would go to Sunday school. We would go to church. We would eat dinner at church. We'd be at BTU. We'd be at choir. Oh, miss me with that. Because I never felt it. I'm that guy. I'm too smart for my own good. I'm at this Southern Baptist church. It's a lot of old folk that immigrated to Los Angeles from there, my grandparents and the rest of them, and I'm looking at them and I'm like, y'all ain't as sharp. This new generation, we not feeling that. You guys up in here, you need somebody to tell you how to run your life. You need somebody to tell you how to live your life. You need to believe in these myths. You need to believe in this stuff that's been forced on you. You look good believing that, but you need to miss me with that. I'm not feeling it. I don't believe it. And it feel like myths and stuff. And I totally rejected that idea. Just like in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, with that rejection, we imagined that we had abandoned the God idea entirely. We rejected what folk were doing up in church. I'm looking at people as if I'm, but I've always been good at judging folk. That's always been my thing. So I came in here and I hit the, so when we get to our second step in Alcoholics Anonymous, our first step is our problem. Talk about this letting go and letting God idea. The first step is the problem. And it's a conclusion I draw based on my experience. I don't come into Alcoholics Anonymous and learn how to be powerless. No, alcohol decided that for me. Thank you very much. You know, I don't have to come in here. You know, but you guys allow me to give it a name. You know, like I said, I love that movie, Things to Do in Denver. When you're given a name, I didn't know that's what you named it. You know, I didn't know that. I thought, you know, I had stuff backwards. I didn't know that I had an allergy that made me drink so much. I thought I had high capacity. I thought that's why I did it, you know. I thought I did it because I wanted to, and this is how the big boys roll. And the people that don't, you can't hang with us. I didn't know. You gave it a name, and you let me see the truth about some stuff. So you allowed me to see some things that I didn't see on my own. And the other thing that you did is you shared with me that alcohol had its way with you and 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 with you, and there was no comeback from it, and it snuffed out the last flicker of hope that I could do this thing by myself. So that's a couple. So the soil is being tilled. I'm getting ready, right? And so then our second step, when I'm really having a lot of problems, a lot of people come to second step thinking I already have this power, I already have a relationship. You know, I like to come blank slate. And the second step, the best place for it in our book is the chapter, you know, We Agnostics. And in We Agnostics it says, you know, if when I take one, I can't control the amount I take. That's me. And if when I honestly want to quit, I find I can't quit entirely on my own, that's me, then I may be suffering from an illness that only a spiritual experience will conquer. Wow. Only a spiritual experience to conquer? Check this out when you're reading the book. I'm not one to read the book and just be nodding my head. I'll be like, really? I don't know who told you that, but it ain't for me. It ain't only a spiritual. So why do I believe only? Do I believe only a spiritual experience to conquer? I do now. And why do I believe only a spiritual experience to conquer? Because I try to love experience. I try to romantic experience. I try to make money experience. I try to go to the gym experience. I try to acupuncture experience. I try to just say no experience. I try a financial experience. I tried all kind of other things, and none of them had any effect. Last one left, spiritual experience. You know, to one who you know who may be atheist, agnostic, that might seem, you know, that says, you know, these are not always easy. For somebody like me, it's not always easy alternative. This spiritual experience, to be doomed to die an alcoholic death, death over here, or to live life on a spiritual basis, you know, are not always easy. How the hell is that an easy alternative? Dude, death over here. Not only death, alcoholic death, slow death, ugly death, agonizing death, painful death. Okay, you got that over here. Or life. That seemed like it should be an easy choice, right? Life or death. But they slipped that other piece on in. Or to live life on a spiritual basis. Ooh. Why you gotta go there? Are not always easy alternatives. When are alternatives not easy? You're a kid. Again, see, I'm going to pretty soon have to stop talking because all my references are too dated. And people now going to just be like, huh, you know, because my stuff is, you know, when alternatives not easy. I'm a kid, right? And when I was a kid, when you had something wrong with you, castor oil, cod liver oil. Really? That's my choices? You know, castor oil, okay, goddammit. I could shoot you or I could stab you. Which one you want? That's my choices? Okay. You can listen to Liberace or you can listen to Tiny Tim. What the hell is that a choice? What the hell is that about? So when are two alternatives not easy? Alternatives are not easy when they look equally distasteful or they look exactly the same. Alcoholic death, living life on a spiritual basis, look the same to me. Why would they look the same to you? Because I think I know what spiritual life is and I don't. I don't like the way that the medicine looks like it tastes. I know that's the medicine, but I don't like the way it looks like it tastes. I ain't even tasted it. And check this out. Not only do I not like the way the medicine looks like it tastes, here's the other piece.
Who taking medicine for taste anyway? Oh. Me. Me. I want a cherry flavor. I want a, you dying. Dude, you dying. You dying. Make mine grape flavor. And here's the other piece. Here's the other piece. I don't believe that medicine will work for me. And I don't believe that I have the discipline or what it takes to take that medicine the way you guys do. Then what happened, Ralph? You're standing up in front of us. Something happened that made you take that medicine. Second, the negative second step. But I had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I had been living it. Call that the negative second step. Another coming to believe step. I had come to believe in the hopelessness. I'm 33. You know, it's a couple of things people can live without for a long time, I think. But it's a cold thing to live a life with no hope. I think that's what fills our room up. That's a cold place to be, to come from the place of no hope. And I had come to believe that that's how Ralph White's life was looking. A life of no hope, the hopelessness and futility, the nothingness, the not accomplishing, the purposelessness, the lack of purpose and direction. It's hard to be a man living life with no purpose and no hope. Thank God. I always say, thank God for God that he don't make that come. That's a cold place to be for a long time. And I come to believe I was going to be walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning every Friday. I come to believe I was going to be walking the streets. I come to believe that. I come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I have been living it. Therefore, with this simple kit of spiritual tools was placed at my feet, it was nothing left but to pick. So I said, I'm going to try this song. What I have to lose? I took step two out of what do I have to lose? I took it out of desperation. What I got to lose? Another key component to that. I love that chapter, We Agnostics. Call it Spiritual Kindergarten. There's lots of there's nuggets in there. I love it. You know, the heart, believe it or not, coming in without a God idea, that's really a good place to be. Coming in, you know, even resistant to the God idea is almost better than coming in knowing the God idea. Because now can't nobody up in here. You know, the hardest people to get this program, believe it or not, priests, the clergy, people who already know God. Because how is a plumber going to tell me how to do, you know? What's he going to tell me? And the plumber might be your sponsor. You know, a gardener might be your sponsor. You know, somebody that is not at all versed in the scripture might be your sponsor. So it's harder. So if you come in here with no idea about the God idea, that's a good place to be. Because most of us come in, this God concept, why do I need a God concept? And so now we're talking about, let's get to the crux of this let go and let God idea anyway. Oh, before we get to the crux of it, we're going to come back and we're going to start talking about this God concept. Let's take a break for a minute.